This is KIXI, AM and FM, Seattle.
CBS News. The U.S. arms embargo against Turkey has come under sharp criticism from a study group of the House International Relations Committee. I'm Don Kladstrup reporting on the CBS Radio Network. The group, in its study, says it finds no evidence to suggest that U.S. pressure against Turkey would speed up a settlement of the Cyprus problem. Rather, it finds that the arms embargo has done little more than to damage U.S.-Turkish relations, and the congressional study warns that further action along this line would be detrimental to U.S. interests. The embargo was imposed on Turkey a year ago because of Turkey's invasion of Cyprus in 1974. The study group says it is not optimistic about an early Cyprus settlement, and that there is little indication that renewed negotiations would quickly produce any dramatic breakthrough. U.S. intelligence sources say Russia has shipped new supplies of weapons to Mozambique. This amid reports of increased guerrilla operations against neighboring white-ruled Rhodesia. Two Soviet ships were said to have unloaded tanks, rocket launchers, and other arms at the port of Beira. Three other Soviet ships reportedly are en route. President Ford confidently predicts victory in Tuesday's Florida primary. His comments came during a meeting with reporters at the White House, a meeting at which he was asked about an earlier comment in which the president said he did not want to use the word détente anymore.
Forget what the words are. Talk about the process and the results. And the results are constructive for peace now and I think in the future.
President Ford could be on his way to a sweeping victory in next week's Illinois primary, according to a voter survey by Newsweek magazine. Newsweek says interviews with 101 Illinois voters indicate that the president is in position for a telling victory and that Ronald Reagan is being hurt by his ultra-conservative image. Reagan's more immediate concern is the Florida primary, where he declines to predict a winner, but promises it will be a real horse race. George Wallace, considered by many to be the front runner for the Democratic primary in Florida, says he will cut the federal employment rolls 10% if he's elected president. Campaign promises often are fun to hear, but usually draw more yawns than yells of excitement. California Governor Edmund Brown knows from experience. He discussed the matter during an interview on the CBS program 60 Minutes.
I don't think people took my idea seriously. I said I wasn't going to raise taxes. Nobody believed that. I said I believed in punishment for crime. Nobody believed I would believe that because I'm supposed to be a liberal. I said I was going to try to bring new people to government and question everything. It wasn't very exciting. So you don't raise taxes, you're going to be tough on criminals, and you're going to have as much equal opportunity in government and question everything. That's what I'm doing. That's what I've done for 11 months. But when you say it in a campaign, people say, ho-hum, what's that all about?
Governor Brown of California. More news in just a moment.
This time of year, the airways and the newspapers are filled with offers to help prepare your income tax. Some companies even offer to lend you the amount of your refund in advance. Well, this is Gene King with a word of advice from the Council of Better Business Bureaus. With tax laws as they are, it may pay to get professional help if your adjusted gross income is over $10,000. But make sure that the man doing your tax is really a professional. Just because the company advertises a lot doesn't make its people any better qualified to prepare a return. The most reliable help in preparing income tax returns usually comes from certified public accountants or even the Internal Revenue Service itself. Remember, regardless of who prepares your tax returns, you are responsible for what is reported, not the man or the company that prepares it. And if you're called in or questioned, you're the one who must answer.
Funeral services are scheduled for Wednesday for Congressman Wright Patman, who died Sunday of pneumonia at Bethesda Naval Hospital. Patman, who was 82, will be buried in Texarkana, Texas. Sunday was drinking day in Atlanta, and first reports are that the city survived. Bars and restaurants sold alcoholic beverages for the first time on a Sunday, thanks to a new law making it legal. Atlanta police say they have not noticed any upsurge in drunk driving or public drunkenness. In San Francisco, a new go-soft policy against perpetrators of so-called victimless crimes has brought warnings the Bay City will soon be a haven for hookers. According to Brock Morris, assistant manager of the Jack Tarm Hotel, prostitution is soaring.
More than doubled, I'd say tripled or quadrupled in the last 3-4 months. And it's become a bigger problem than it has at any time since say 1967 or 68.
And Morris says it's no laughing matter either.
Just this week I had a great deal of explaining to do with the heads of a very important Japanese tour in the city. They were very upset because of all the activity that had been pressed upon them by prostitutes and actively soliciting on the premises of the hotel, and they really keep us running.
Morris and other San Francisco businessmen think the go-soft policy should be replaced by a get-tough policy. Treasury Secretary William Simon, who has just completed a round of talks with Egyptian President Anwar Sadat, called the Egyptian leader a man of tremendous vision and courage. His comments followed an agreement in which the U.S. agreed to provide Egypt with almost $2 billion in foreign aid over the next 2 years. Postmaster General Benjamin Baylor warns that the postal system could be destroyed unless basic cuts are made. In a speech he'll deliver later today in Detroit, Baylor says first-class mail could become a luxury unless the public faces up to reality. For example, Baylor questions whether Americans really need a six-day-a-week delivery. Don Cladstrip, CBS News.
CBS for Seattle, this is KIXI. The weather outlook calls for variable cloudiness tonight, partly sunny tomorrow with increasing chance of light rain late tomorrow night and Tuesday. The highs in the lower 50s and lows near 40. And currently in downtown Seattle, 42 degrees, 41 at the airport. The barometer rising, it reads 30.20. And taking a look at sport, in the National Basketball Association, New Orleans dumped the Seattle Supersonics 124-106. Elsewhere, Chicago 91, Los Angeles 88. Phoenix beat Portland 106-84. Atlanta 123, Houston 106. Washington over New York 92-81. Kansas City beat Milwaukee 113-97, and Boston got past Detroit 88-87.
Presents.
I'm E.G. Marshall, bellwether of the flock that assembles here for ceremonies in the mysterious and the macabre. Anyone will tell you that it's impossible to foretell the future, to predict the outcome of events that have not yet happened. That is, anyone with even a modicum of common sense. And yet, if this is so, why does a vast majority of mankind try so desperately to do it? Why do people who, in other respects, are reasonably sane, risk their substance in the belief that they can foretell which stock will go up, which horse will win a race, and where the wheel that turns round and round will finally come to rest? Why? If we only knew.
Oh, Mr. Stretch and Mr. Chadwick.
May we come in? Clarence, we have a problem.
What sort of problem, Mr. Stretch?
We must decide whether or not to let you live.
But...
You owe us $50,000.
I'll pay it.
When? How? Your only chance is Miss Penelope Meadows.
Oh, no, 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 no.
Marry Penelope Meadows.
Not her. Oh, no.
Miss Meadows has $50,000 and more.
It's not worth it.
You mean it's, not worth your life?
Our mystery drama, The Last Lesson, was written especially for the Mystery Theater by Sam Dan and stars Fred Gwynn. It is sponsored in part by Buick Motor Division and Time Magazine. I'll be back shortly with Act One.
For a lot of people, a full-size car is a downright necessity. Buick understands that, which is why they build the Sabre, a car with lots of standard comfort and convenience, a big trunk, and honest-to-goodness elbow room for six. Buick LeSabre. Free spirit in the family size.
Working properly and never burn trash. This reminder from your lung association is a matter of life and breath.
I don't believe it. Tell me again.
Okay. The Internal Revenue Service has over 80 free publications to help answer all those taxing questions you have on your mind.
Uh-huh. What if I'm a flagpole sitter whose pole was attacked by termites?
All right. Flagpole, termites. It's publications 547 and 584.
An ant left me an elephant under 12 years of age for me to care for.
Mm-hmm. Adolescent elephant, 501.
People throw money when my 98-year-old uncle lifts weights at the beach. Is that income?
Mm-hmm. 554 and 525.
Does the IRS have an answer for everything?
Well, just about. There are over 80 free publications for the asking at any IRS district office. You can write for them by using the order blank on your 1040 tax package. Yep, over 80 tax answering publications. Free from the IRS.
Life is a matter of reconciliation. On a spiritual level, we must reconcile our dreams with reality. On a practical level, we must reconcile our income with our outgo. A difficult matter at best. And you can imagine the problem it poses for Clarence Porter. Clarence is 40-ish and stylish, handsome, well-spoken, charming, a prince of good fellows, but he is no judge of horseflesh, nor is he able to predict the fall of the ball at roulette or the draw of the card at blackjack. And so, Clarence, as they say, is strapped.
Oh.
Is that all you can say, Clarence?
Oh? Come in, Mr. Stretch.
Clarence, meet an associate of mine. Mr. Chadwick.
How do you do, sir?
Mr. Chadwick is my silent partner.
Glad to meet you, sir.
No, Clarence. You will not be glad you met Mr. Chadwick. Believe me.
Fix you gentlemen a drink?
We never drink on the job.
The job?
Oh. Were you under the impression this is a social call? We're here to collect the money.
The money? Mm. Oh, yes. Well, I happen to be a little tight at the moment.
Ah, but this is the moment. The particular moment. The agreed-upon moment.
Yes, I...
Clarence, Mr. Chadwick and I have a problem. Do you know what it is? We must decide whether or not to kill you.
No, just a minute.
Emotionalism is hardly conducive to rational analysis.
I want to pay you.
Of course you do, but the question is, can you?
I'll pay.
How? Please list your assets.
Well, I've...
No assets. Prospects?
At this time...
Yes?
I'm sure something will turn up.
No prospects at all?
Please, Mr. Stretch.
Clarence, I've been frank with you.
I know, and I do appreciate that.
And now, you had better get your jacket.
Where are we going?
I'm not quite sure. Mr. Chadwick has various places where he...
No.
Well, Clarence, a gentleman may lack for many things, but he can always have his dignity.
Wait,
what for?
Prospects. Now that I think...
Yes?
There is. There may be a prospect.
Oh, I hope so, Clarence. Believe me.
Why? Why didn't I think of it before?
What is your prospect?
If it's the only way to save my life, I guess I'll have to do it.
Do what?
Get married. It sounded like a marvelous idea, except that rich, unmarried ladies are rather like policemen or taxicabs. There's never one at hand when they're really needed. The only lady I could think of at the moment was Penelope Meadows. Penny. She had several million dollars, and she wasn't too bad looking, but there was so much of her. She was 6 feet, 2 inches tall, and built to scale.
I'm gonna move you around a bit, Clarence. And how'd you like that one? Trying to put it away, are you? You're getting old and fat. What's the net? Now go back. Ah, that's it. It's game, set, match.
Yeah. Yeah, you were great, Penny. Just great.
Well, you better sit down before you collapse.
I need a drink.
Of course. Milk. You have to pile up the protein. Waiter, 2 milks, please. Well, old fella, your tennis was abominable, as usual.
Penny.
Oh, no.
How do you know what I'm going to say?
Well, when you get that look on your face, I'm sure it has to be something foolish.
I love you.
I was right.
Penny, I love you.
It's impossible.
Why do you say it's impossible?
Well, 2 reasons. First, it's only possible for you to love yourself.
No, that's not fair.
Well, it may not be fair, but it's true. You see, Clarence, old boy, you're a rogue, a rascal, and a scoundrel. I mean, you're completely self-centered. You're irresponsible, shallow, reckless, lazy.
But you have to admit, aside from that, I'm nice.
Oh, yes, Clarence, in a superficial way.
I'm attractive.
Yes, you have a surface charm.
Penny, I love you.
Well, the second reason why that's impossible, you see, nobody could really love me.
Oh, Penny.
Well, look at me. I'm sort of... No, I'll say it. I'm big.
Well, generous.
Gawky.
Nevertheless, you are quite graceful. I love you.
You love my money.
Well, why not? The money's part of you. Penny, I won't deny it. Many of the things you said about me are true, but that was all before we met. Because of you, my life is now changed.
Oh, Clarence, do you expect me to believe this?
Penny, darling, I know you have a feeling for me, too. I sense it. Marry me.
Clarence Porter, I wouldn't marry you if you were the last man on Earth.
And let me tell you something, Penny. If I were the last man on Earth, and I could choose among millions of women, I would still choose you.
Oh, well, you do have a certain charm, Clarence. But I have no intention of getting married. Now, even if I love you, which I assure you, I do not.
Why?
Well, I don't want to belong to anyone. And I don't want anyone to belong to me.
But these days, people don't belong to each other. Each can go his or her own way.
Well, then why get married?
Give yourself a chance to know love. Find out for yourself that it's love that makes the world go round.
Ah, thank you, waiter. Oh, and doesn't that look delicious? So rich and creamy.
Don't be afraid of love.
Oh, drink your milk, Clarence.
Don't miss the sweetness.
Clarence, old sport, you're wasting your time.
The tenderness.
Clarence, you're becoming a bore.
She was my last hope, and now I would have to leave town. Perhaps it wasn't the worst thing. After all, the willingness to strike out in new directions, find new opportunities, new frontiers, was the spirit that motivated our pioneer ancestors. I had done it before. I could do it again. Oh.
Yes, Clarence. Once again, it's time to say, oh. Going on a trip, I see.
Who? Me? Oh, no.
Why are those bags packed?
The bags? Oh, the bags. I've got some old clothes that I'm taking to a church rummage sale.
I'm all for charity, Clarence. But it should begin at home.
You know perfectly well I'm working very hard at getting your money.
How did the marriage thing go today?
Marriage?
Hmm.
Oh, that. Well, she's crazy about me.
She is.
And any day now, she'll be ready to say yes.
She will.
I told you, her name is Penelope Meadows.
We checked her financial standing.
Well, then, everything's just fine, isn't it?
Of course. It isn't possible that you're packing in preparation for a, departure?
Oh, no, not at all. I'm going to pop the question tomorrow, as a matter of fact. Certainly have to be here to do that, don't I? Excuse me.
No, permit me. Mr. Porter's apartment. Yes? Thank you, I'll tell him. Well, now, that was the doorman of all people. He says to inform you that the car has been checked and it's out front and ready for your trip.
Oh, there must be a mistake.
No doubt. Well, Mr. Chadwick and I are ready, Clarence.
Look, please, why? Why can't you give me another chance?
Another chance. She turned you down, unfortunately. Which is why you decided to leave town.
What are you going to do to me? Look, you won't get anything at all if you kill me.
That's where you are wrong. We get a great deal. That's where your value is now. When you... when your remains are found tomorrow, people will know why, and it will encourage certain lackadaisical folk to acquire a sense of urgency, if you know what I mean.
Oh, yes. I knew what he meant. I looked at their faces, their cold, hard, cruel faces. There was no appeal. There was nothing I could say to them. And as they stepped forward to take me by the arms, I, for the very first time in my life, I prayed, please, please give me another chance. Get me out of this somehow, and I'll never get into this kind of trouble again. Never. Never.
Oh, who's that?
I don't know.
You mustn't make a sound. Perhaps they'll go away.
Clarence!
It's Penny.
Clarence, I know you're in there. The doorman said you were still upstairs. I must talk to you. Clarence, I intend to stay here until you let me in.
I'm afraid we'll have to do that. Let her in. And we shall be watching and listening from the kitchen. I advise you to be discreet.
I'm coming.
Please, let me in. Clarence, you simply must save me.
Save you, Penny?
Oh, I know. I'm sure you must despise me after all the tactless things I said this afternoon, but I'm in trouble, terrible trouble, and there's only one way I can get out of it. You'll have to marry me.
I'll have to what?
Marry me, Clarence. Marry me. Right now.
Now?
Yeah, it's 3 o'clock. The license bureau closes at 6, or is it 5 or 4? We must hurry.
Well, I...
Was it only a joke? When you proposed to me this morning, I mean, you did propose, you know, and I accept. I accept, Clarence. I mean, I must marry you. Do you know why?
You love me.
Well, if I don't get married, I can lose my inheritance.
Why?
See, it comes from my uncle. He was a great believer in marriage, and I just found out. There's a clause in his will that states if I'm not married by the age of 35, I forfeit all my rights.
You just found out?
Yeah, tomorrow I shall be 35, see? So now I only have till midnight tonight.
So, then, come on, let's hurry.
Oh, Clarence, old man, now I must be truthful. I don't know if I'm marrying you because, well, you know, you're the only one I can get a hold of on such short notice, or if I really, truly, and honestly...
Oh, darling, believe me, this marriage was made in heaven. It was just made in heaven.
Where else? If you consider what the extremely fortuitous arrival of Miss Penelope Meadows has meant to Clarence Porter, you might conclude that his troubles are over. However, this goes against all conventional wisdom, for everybody knows that when a man marries, his troubles begin. But this will be the business of Act Two, which I shall bring to you in just a few moments.
No.
You're the biggest theatrical agent in Duluth.
And I got that way by saying no.
My act is a natural for TV, nightclubs.
Let me get this straight. You come out on stage and crawl under a blanket for half an hour.
It's not a blanket. It's a Peruvian forecasting shawl. That's the big
thing.
And
difference. You have to be under it to foretell
all the events coming up. Yes, that's right.
Well, you know that literary prediction you made under
wonderful,
there?
Wonderful, wasn't it?
Well, it already happened. I read all about it in this week's Time magazine in the book department.
Oh,
and the movie prediction you made?
Yeah.
It was in Time Cinema.
That's a coincidence.
And the trends in education
don't
you talked Time's education department.
Boy.
So I think you've got a Time magazine.
All right, I see the problem here. You don't believe I can foretell the future, do you?
No.
All right, ask me anything, and I'll go under the blank, the shawl.
Go ahead. How much pastrami will they eat in Yugoslavia next year?
Pastrami?
Yes.
In Yugoslavia?
That's right.
Would something like that come under the classification of business and economy, do you think?
I knew it.
Or is that more modern living type prediction? I know it's not letters to the editor.
Time makes everything more interesting, including you.
Dreams. We all seek to understand the many ways in which God reveals his word. Throughout time, God has spoken to man in dreams. Jehovah said in the Old Testament, "Listen to my words. If a man be a prophet, I make myself known to him in visions. I speak to him in dreams." So, pay attention to your own dreams. They might well reveal flashes of the future, predictions and warnings of things to come. They may give you a glimpse of God's guidance to lead you back to the peace and security of his way. For your free booklet on dreams, write to the Foundation Church, 1147 First Avenue, New York, New York, 10021. That's the Foundation Church, 1147 First Avenue, New York, New York, 10021.
Marriage, as we idealize it, is based on romantic love. Marriage, as a practical way of life, should also be rooted in self-interest. Did two people ever need each other more than Clarence Porter and Penelope Meadows? She needed him to preserve her fortune. He needed her to guarantee his life. Certainly, we have here the basis for an enduring relationship. Or do we?
You know how it is. We make certain promises under the pressure of certain situations. And then we discover we may have been a bit hasty. Oh, yes, I prayed and I promised I would follow a different kind of life. I did say I would experience a change of heart. But what can you do with the heart? It has a life of its own, and it didn't want to change. Meanwhile, I must say my bride bloomed, blossomed, flourished as a result of our marriage.
Have some more goat's milk, Clarence.
I'm just not very hungry this morning, my dear.
Oh, now. One must be prepared to face the world bravely, ready at all times for a fight or a frolic. Proteins, my darling, proteins. Milk, cheese, nuts, beans.
Yes, dear.
Clarence, old sport. You were right.
About what?
Everything. You were right about love and marriage and... Well, that's everything. I'm so happy. I never knew what I was missing.
Yes, yes, dear.
Well, now what shall we do today?
I was thinking we might go to the track.
The race track?
It was just an idea.
The race track? It's infested by the lowest elements.
Some of the very best people can be found at...
Well, now, Clarence, if you're looking for thrills...
Well, I'm not really looking for thrills.
I know exactly where we can go.
But we don't have to go anywhere.
No, but we must. You've got to be on the move, up and about, or you'll develop hardening of the arteries.
I should live that long. 2 hours later, I was dangling precariously in the sky, 1,000 feet above the earth, in what is called a free balloon. There we were, in a little wicker basket suspended from a huge sphere filled with air. And there was a crazy kind of stove contraption to heat up the air, or whatever it was, inside that silly balloon. And when I wasn't hanging onto the ropes for dear life, I was terrified. The whole thing could burn up or blow up. What am I doing here?
Isn't this fantastic?
Yeah.
Oh, you see, Clarence, you have to learn to live, to pit your mind and body against the elements. Are you enjoying it?
Oh, yeah, yes. It's fine.
Oh, I was afraid you'd be bored.
Bored? No, no.
Oh, I'll tell you what, Clarence. Tomorrow, let's do something really exciting. Now, just to make sure you clear the aircraft, you see, and then pull.
Look, Penny.
Oh, you adore this?
But supposing the parachute doesn't open?
That's negative thinking. Negative thinking.
Yeah, but what if?
Now, Clarence, these parachutes are packed by experts, and they're very closely supervised. And if your chute doesn't open, why the man loses his job.
Oh.
Now, you're holding the ring. See, now, I'm going to give you just one little push.
Penny!
I'll be coming right after you.
No!
Foothold chopped out in just a couple of shakes, Clarence.
Yeah, yeah.
Cold, are you, darling? Well, that's because you aren't moving. Now, we'll be on our way soon.
That's great.
Only 1,000 feet more to the summit.
1,000 feet more?
Well, we could have gone up the safe and simple way, but I know how you despise the routine and the ordinary.
I don't exactly despise...
No, Clarence, don't look down. Look up. What an accomplishment. To climb up the sheer face of the rock. You look bored.
Who, me?
Oh, my dearest old boy, I know you. How can we make this more exciting?
More exciting?
I know. We'll do it in the dark. This is what spelunking is, darling. Cave exploring is just like mountain climbing. In the dark. Isn't it?
Yes, it certainly is.
Now, we must be positive, absolutely positive, not to take a wrong turning, you see, and that's so easy to do. Most of these tunnels and passages have never been explored. Why, we could be lost forever. Stay close to me, darling.
Where are we?
Well, I think we're at the rim of a simply, enormous abyss. I don't know how far down the bottom is. Let me drop this rock. Well, I guess there is no bottom.
How is an idea born? I don't know. It seems one minute it didn't exist, and the next, why, there it is. There are those who say the idea was lurking about in the subconscious all the while. Well, at any rate, there it was. The idea, the thought, the concept that I had to kill Penelope. And this was nothing that I would have to analyze, consider, or debate. I was going to do it. I have to do it. I can't live this way. Indeed, this way I would be dead long before my time. And so, actually, I'm going to kill this impossible woman in self-defense.
Got him. Got him.
Yes, you certainly did.
Oh, the ugly brute. See how his friends have gathered round to finish him off? Let me bag a few more. More. Oh, hold the boat steady, old boy. Beast, my friends. Is there anything more ugly than a shark? Well, enough fun for one morning. Let's head for home.
It has to be an accident. Anything else would arouse the suspicions of the police. Now, we could have an accident right here. I could throw her overboard. It's too far to swim, and besides, the sharks. But that's no good. I definitely have to be somewhere else when it happens, and therefore beyond suspicion. Besides, look at her. I mean, if it came to it, she could throw me overboard. but I know she'll want to take the boat out again tomorrow. And then, well, we shall see.
Try some yak butter, dear. I understand it's fantastically low in cholesterol.
Thank you, my dear.
Ready for some sport this morning?
I thought I would play some golf.
Golf? Clarence, old man, time enough for golf when you're in your 80s.
Well, an old friend from the service is in town, and we agreed to meet for a couple of holes.
Okay. Why don't you boys have your fun? I can take the boat out alone.
Which is exactly the idea. My darling, while you were deep in slumber last night, I was working on the boat. I cut out several very large timbers in the hull, and then I replaced them. But they will not hold too well. And by the time you get out to your favorite shark hunting grounds, some 3 or 4 miles offshore, the vibration of the engines and the pressure of the water should knock them out, and the boat will be instantly swamped. Well, accidents happen, and I'll be playing golf. Who would suspect me? So, I went to the club. The starter placed me into a foursome. I played my 18 holes. I established my presence on the golf course, and then I went home to sit and wait for, let us say, word from the Coast Guard. I was quietly reading and listening to some music when I heard a car pull up. Aha, here comes the tragic news. I shall be properly shocked.
Hello, darling.
Penny, what are you doing here?
What am I doing here? I live here.
I thought you'd still be shark fishing.
Oh, Clarence, I had the most fabulous adventure. You should have been there.
What happened?
Well, there I was, 5 miles out, and the water was literally solid with sharks.
Yes?
Yeah, I was potting away at them with my rifle when suddenly, I don't know how to describe it, I was in the water.
Did you fall out of the boat?
No, suddenly there was no boat. It was as if the bottom had fallen out of it.
But the sharks?
Well, there I was in the water, and I was still holding the rifle, and the shark was practically at my elbow. I kind of rapped him on the nose with the rifle butt. That must have scared him away.
Yeah, but the other sharks?
Well, obviously, those fellows weren't paying any attention to me. They were much too busy feasting on their wounded friends.
What did you do?
Oh, I started swimming away from there in a hurry. Fortunately, a Coast Guard boat had spotted me, and just in time, too.
What could have happened to the boat?
Well, it's on the bottom of the ocean, old sport, I guess. We'll never know. Some salad, old chap.
It's
a special Southern Pacific algae, and it's garnished with plankton. You won't get better protein anywhere.
Thank you, my dear. I'm not hungry.
Oh, I'm worried about you, old man.
No. I'm fine.
Aren't you coming down to the Oval?
No, dear. I'm too nervous to watch your race.
Oh, it's fantastic sport.
Oh, but you go around those curves at 90 and 100 miles an hour. Well, it's too much for me.
Oh, that's nothing.
I wish you luck, dear, and I wish you would quit racing. Well, she may quit after today. Last night, while she was asleep, I arrange matters with the stock car she races. You know those lugs that hold the wheel to the axle? Well, I file some of them down. And given the strains of high-speed driving and turning, the wheel should fly off. And at 90 miles an hour... Wait, the race should be on now on one of those stations.
Well, here we go into the last 10 laps, folks, where we separate the men from the boys. And I should say the girls from the women, because the leader in this race so far is Penny Meadows Porter. And what a race she has run. Smart, bold, all out. Hell-bent for leather. Yes, sir, she has beaten off challenge after challenge by the best and the most daring drivers in the business. And here we go. She's heading into the far turn. Dead man's bend. And watch her take it. Wait, wait, something's wrong. A wheel. Her left front wheel, it is just blown off. And her car is out of control. And she's going to... No, no!
Hello, darling.
Penny, you're all right.
Of course.
I heard it on the radio. I came over here as quickly as I could.
Oh, I'm fine. Doc just wants to look at some x-rays. But I could get out of bed this minute and go right home.
The car was a total wreck. What happened?
Well, we'll never know. It burned up. Exploded.
And you were in it. And you survived.
Mm-hmm. I guess I'm the penny that keeps turning up.
Yes, but the longest road has a turning. A sinking boat, a burning car. Sometime, somehow, her luck has to run out.
Or does it? Some folk are fortune's favorites. They survive, they come through. Well, all this is awkward for Mr. Clarence Porter. If only his wife would die, so that he can resume the lifestyle he yearns for. Well, he's cooperating. He's doing everything he can to ensure she has a lethal accident. But fate just won't cooperate. Well, we're only a few moments away from Act Three.
You've worked hard to get where you are, and now would be a very good time to give yourself a little pat on the back in the form of Buick Electra, a car filled with room, luxury, comfort, the perfect place for you and your free spirit to get together. Buick Electra. Think of it as recognition for a job well done.
Confused by ads that compare one product to another? This is Gene King of the Council of Better Business Bureaus advising you to use judgment when you shop. Comparative advertising can be helpful to the consumer, but it can also present problems. For example, one company will compare its product to its competitors by singling out one particular feature. But this one feature doesn't necessarily mean that its product is better than the other company's at all. The National Advertising Review Board is looking into this problem right now.
Hello there, this is Jim Backus. You know, I asked my friend, Mr. Magoo, have you ever heard of the disease of prosperity? You probably have, only you've heard of it as heart attack. It's called the disease of prosperity because the risk factors that increase the chances of heart attack are usually the result of prosperous living condition. Childhood habits. Some children get in the habit of watching TV instead of exercising. Smoking often begins in the teens or sometimes even earlier. And by the time they reach middle age, many of them are overweight, inactive, and have high levels of cholesterol and other fatty substances in the blood. High blood pressure is also common at that age. Any one of these conditions or risk factors increases the chance of heart attack. A combination of two or more multiplies that risk. One way you can protect your heart is to see your doctor. Another way is to support your Heart Association's efforts to find more of the answers to heart attack. So give to the Heart Fund now. And thank you very much.
Say the pitcher that is brought to the well too often is sure to be broken. If you will permit the analogy, that's what Clarence Porter is trying to do with his wife. He has arranged for a series of deadly accidents, but from each one, she skips away unscathed. Now, which will prevail? Clarence's persistence or Penelope's luck?
Darling, would you mind turning on the TV? There's a special documentary.
Uh-huh. Anything you say, old sport. Oh, my goodness!
What happened?
Oh, well, I touched the on button, and I felt this little tingle in my fingers. What happened to the set?
What happened to the set? It burned out. That's what happened to the set. And that tingle in your fingers? You know what I did? I wired the on button right to the power supply, directly, and without insulation. And so when you touched it, you'd get the full load. There's almost enough voltage in there to run the electric chair. And all you got was a tingle in your fingers. No, no, there has to be a better way. There has to be. Oh, my, the view from here is fantastic.
Oh, it is, Clarence. You can see for miles. I didn't know you were a nature lover.
Now, dear, let's stand back. We're at the edge of the cliff. We're too close.
Oh, you know me. How very careful I can be.
But that's a drop of 4,000 feet, my darling.
Oh, really, old sport? You mustn't worry so much. Oh, what splendid colors on those hills.
Penny.
What's that?
Look out. This time, I have to win. Last night, I came here. I removed some rock, and I filled in the space with earth so it would look solid. But it's not. And the minute she stepped on it, she would go right through, and I maneuvered her so that she would walk right there. And now she's gone over the side, a sheer drop of 4,000 feet to the jagged rocks below. Her luck finally has run out.
Penny, where are you?
Look down, just over the side. Now be careful. I managed to catch hold of this branch.
What do I do now? What else can I do? It's just not meant to be. That's all. I can't kill her. Because she obviously can't be killed. And I will simply have to reconcile myself to my fate. And live a clean, healthy, outdoor life. Please, believe me. I said that and I meant that. And I would have stuck with it. But one morning, there was a knock on the door. Oh.
Ah, yes. Oh.
It's
Mr. Stretch and Mr. Chadwick. May we come in? Thank you. Lovely, lovely home you have here, Clarence.
Oh, thank you. Won't you gentlemen sit down, drink?
Surely by this time, Clarence, you must know that Mr. Chadwick and I never drink on the job.
Oh. You're here on business.
Precisely. You see, you owe us a sum of money.
Yes, I know.
And you asked for time so that you could make a suitable match.
Yes. Well,
and so?
I just can't ask my wife for that kind of money.
My boy, your wife has it.
But she isn't going to give it to me. I mean...
Clarence, that is your problem.
But...
Unless you want Mr. Chadwick and me to make it our problem?
No. I'll see to it. You'll get your money.
Of course we will. Now, can we set a date?
Well... Soon.
Soon. In that case, you will hear from us. Soon.
And there it was. I had my choice. I could go to her and say, I need $50,000. And she would ask, why? And if I told her, she'd probably divorce me. And then where would I be? Or I could kill her. And inherit. But maybe she would let me have the money. Maybe if I put it to her in the right way. Darling, suppose a very dear friend of yours, someone very close to you, needed a considerable sum of money. A matter of life and death.
Well, old sport, why was the money needed?
Supposing he had squandered the money.
Oh, we all make mistakes.
Supposing he had lost it betting on horses and roulette.
Oh, say no more.
And the underworld was after him to make good.
Such a person is beneath pity.
Even contempt?
Well, not necessarily.
Now, Clarence, did you want to help some friend of yours?
Well...
Oh, Clarence, you're so generous. And so naive. I mean, keep away from people like that.
Yeah. But he's really a very nice person.
Such a person would not be allowed in my home.
Now I have to kill her. But how? I've done everything. Maybe it's true. She can't be killed. No, can't be true. Anyone can be killed. I'll point the gun at her. I'll pull the trigger. That's going to do it. But I'd better prepare for it. I waited for a rainy night so I'd be harder to recognize. And I stole over to a neighbor's house. They were an elderly couple. I stood outside their living room window. I made a slight noise. I heard the lady call out.
Who's there?
I could see how frightened she and her husband were. I watched as he picked up the phone. Good. That's exactly what I wanted him to do. Then I stole away to another house. A woman lived there, alone. At this house, I actually broke the lock on the back door before she heard me. From there on, it was plain sailing. I had established what I had to establish, the presence of a prowler in the neighborhood.
I got it.
Hi, it's the sheriff.
I do, Mr. Porter. Mind if I come in?
Oh, please do.
Evening, Miss Porter.
Anything wrong, Sheriff?
Well, I'm afraid so. Folks around here have been complaining about a prowler. You been out tonight? You seen anyone, Mr. Porter?
No. I wasn't out. I've been in all evening.
The Jeffersons seen him, so the Watsons and old Miss Blake.
Hmm. What does the man look like?
I said they seen him. That don't mean they seen his face. They seen someone prowling about. Miss Blake says he actually forced open a back door, but her scream brought some other neighbors running, and that scared him off.
Hmm. Well, we haven't seen anyone.
Well, just keep your doors and windows locked, folks, till this is over.
Oh, I don't think I'd be afraid of him, Sheriff.
Ma'am, with all due respect, he's probably armed. Now, just be careful, will you?
Well, now to do it. I'd bought the revolver, a big .38. Do the job right. I needed an alibi, but that was no problem. I informed Mr. Stretch of my requirements. And since it was in his interest as well, a very respectable gentleman was found who would swear we had a business dinner together in the city. And so only the deed remained. And the deed, well, it was simple. I thought I would agonize over it more than I did. She was sitting in the library, just reading. I approached her, and she said,
"Why don't we have a glass of milk, old chum?"
Those were the last words she ever said. I drove to the city, and I drove back late that night. There was considerable activity in my home, as you might imagine. The police were there. And I must say, I gave the impression of being terribly surprised.
I'm so sorry for her and for you, Clarence.
Doctor, it's terrible. Where's the sheriff?
He said he'd be right back. He may have some evidence.
What happened?
Well, you know there's been a prowler, and I suppose she surprised him, and he killed her.
Any clues, any idea of who this animal could be?
The sheriff's working on it, but that's not so important anymore.
No, how can you say that?
Well, I say that because she was dying.
What? Who? Who was dying?
Penny. She didn't want you to know.
I don't understand.
Well, a few weeks ago, when she crashed in the stock car race...
Oh, you mean she received an injury that...
No. But I had her in the hospital, and I was taking tests. And just, well, we discovered something. It seems she had acute myeloid leukemia.
I don't... understand.
Nor do I. Nor does medical science. It's a quick and subtle and fatal disease. Why, how, who knows? You're perfectly all right one day, and then suddenly it hits you, and within a few weeks, you're dead.
And she had this?
Yes, Clarence. She didn't want you to know. She was losing ground so rapidly, she would have died within a few weeks.
No. Oh. No, no.
Mr. Porter.
Sheriff.
Mr. Porter, I'm going to arrest you for the murder of your wife. And everything you say can be used against you.
What do you mean? Arrest me? On what grounds? Why would I want
to... You'd know that better than I would. Now, last night, I come to your house in the pouring rain. I says, there's a prowler. Might you have seen him? You said you hadn't been out. I had seen that you had mud on your shoes. Now, I said nothing, awaiting further development. Now, this prowler left footprints beneath the windows of three houses in the neighborhood and your own house. Now, we got casts of them shoe prints. Earlier this evening, I examined the shoes with the mud on them. The ones you wore last night. They fit to a T. Now, will you talk to us now or later, Mr. Porter?
He waited till later, but they broke him down, or he broke himself down, just thinking he had tried so hard. And he didn't have to do anything. You shouldn't do anything either until I return in just a few moments.
Okay, I made a mistake. My first mistake. But they say guys like me coming out of jail usually wind up coming right back.
I like sitting in the park, but not every day. I want to do something useful. People around here, though, they think you're over 65. You're useless.
The man crossed him. Shoot. Who are you kidding, girl? You're nowhere unless you can read.
Tough problems call for real solutions, not just talk. If your community has a problem, you need action. Action is skilled volunteers of all ages working together to help solve tough community problems. Write Action, Department Q, Washington, D.C., 20525. Between us, there's got to be a solution.
This is a public service of this station and the Advertising Council.
The text for today's little sermon is from Mr. Clarence Porter himself. How ironic of fate to teach us a lesson after we have no further use for it. How wise Mr. Porter is now. But what good is his wisdom in the prison laundry, where he shall labor the remainder of his natural life? We hope you've learned a lesson. Our cast included Fred Gwynn, Marion Haley, Leon Janney, and Dan Ocko. The entire production was under the direction of Hyman Brown. And now, a preview of our next tale.
Helen, what is it?
No. Oh, no.
No, Helen, look at her. Help me. He's fainted.
Where am I?
In your rooms, Herman.
What happened to me? Oh, I remember. I fainted. I saw...
Well, what did you see?
You must promise not to laugh at me.
I promise.
She winked at me.
She what?
She winked at me.
Oh. Oh.
You say that as if you think I'm crazy. I'm not. I'm the sanest person you know.
But the old countess, my grandmother is dead.
I know. But she winked at me.
Radio Mystery Theater was sponsored in part by Time Magazine and Buick Motor Division.
This is E.G. Marshall inviting you to return to our Mystery Theater for another adventure in the macabre. Until next time, pleasant dreams.
Beautiful music. This is KIXI, Seattle.
CBS News. Local elections in France show continued division between left and right, but reflect some powerful swings toward the Socialist Party. I'm Mike Stanley reporting on the CBS Radio Network. Results from Saturday's local elections in France now are nearly complete. The biggest single total for any party was racked up by the Socialist Party, which won 155 seats outright. Other left-wing opposition parties took 177 seats. Next top vote-getters were President Valéry Giscard d'Estaing's Independent Republicans, who won 133 of the 553 seats won by pro-government candidates. There will be a runoff contest next Sunday for seats in which no clear-cut majority was established in Saturday's voting. In this country, the candidates put in a busy day, pegging their efforts toward Tuesday's Florida primary. Ronald Reagan, who once predicted a solid victory in the Sunshine State, but now says it's a horse race between him and President Ford, attacked administration economic policies. He warned signs of an economic upturn may be only an election year calm before a new storm of unemployment and inflation. The former California governor has been critical of detente. He concedes, however, selling grain to Russia is more to our advantage than to the Soviets, but called for free markets.
I think the mistake that was made with our farmers was when the government told them to raise everything they could, grow all the crops they could, and that they would have free access to the market, and then yielded to pressure from another direction, and after they had harvested the grain, put an embargo on, and when they were finally released to sell it, the market had shrunk because they had found other sources, but also the price had been cut virtually in half. But I think we should turn the American farmer loose on the free marketplace to do what he can do better than any other farmers in the world.
Reagan appeared on ABC's Issues and Answers. President Ford wrapped up his Florida campaigning a week ago, but made one last pitch for votes there with a White House interview by Florida newsmen. He repeated his assertion that he has gained strength in Florida because his economic policies have begun to show real progress. Democratic candidates on the stump in Florida included Jimmy Carter, Henry Jackson, George Wallace, and Milton Schapp. Morris Udall says he's had second thoughts about his choice of bypassing the Florida primary. He also says New York will be a pivotal primary, but his name isn't on the ballot there, and election officials can't even tell voters how to vote for him.
We're going to put our primary effort in Wisconsin and devote what we can, and I think it'll be substantial, to New York. Senator Jackson is way ahead. This is his best state of all the 50. They're geared up to spend $1 million there. He's got heavy support. He's predicting a landslide, and he just may be right. So what I'm saying to the New York progressives, get behind me. Loosen up your wallets. Now's the time. You sit around here waiting to beat brokers in a deadlock convention, you may find Scoop Jackson making his acceptance speech by the time you get there.
CBS News continues following this message.
This is a message to some very special people.
They're special people because even though they may feel fine, they're dying. They're people who have high blood pressure and aren't treating it seriously. If you're one of these people, take a few seconds to listen to some statistics. They may help you add years to your life. Insurance companies have found the higher your blood pressure is, the more years you can subtract from your life. For example, if your blood pressure is 140 over 95, subtract 9 years from your life. And if it's 150 over 100, you could die 16 years too early. Here are a few more numbers to think about. If you don't treat your high blood pressure, chances are 3 times greater that you'll have a stroke, and almost 5 times greater that you'll suffer from congestive heart failure. But you can lead a longer and healthier life if you treat your high blood pressure seriously. See your doctor. Get back on your treatment. Treat your high blood pressure and live. A public service message of this station and the Advertising Council.
The wall poster battle goes on in China as moderates attack the wife of Mao Zedong and rightists continue charging the senior vice premier with being a capitalist roader. But despite the bitterness of the attack on the man who once appeared to be the heir apparent to Zhou Enlai, he still may have considerable power, as we hear from Barry Kalb in Hong Kong.
Indications from China are that the factional dispute there is still very much a dispute and not merely a one-sided attack by the radicals. The indications came over the weekend as a group of Peking-based diplomats was taken to the capital's Peta University for a briefing on the dispute. The tour included a look at wall posters attacking Deng Xiaoping, whose titles when the dispute began were first vice premier, fifth vice chairman of the Communist Party, and chief of staff of the army. Because of the vehemence of the recent attacks against Deng, it was considered possible he had been quietly purged in the last month. But one diplomat asked a university official if Deng still held all 3 jobs. The response? Until now, we have not heard anything about the changes in his post. A possibly ambiguous reply, but it looks like Deng Xiaoping is still a very powerful man in China. Barry Kalb, CBS News, Hong Kong.
The psychiatrist called by the prosecution to dispute Patricia Hearst's claim she helped rob a bank under fear of death is scheduled to return to the witness stand today. Defense attorney F. Lee Bailey on Friday challenged the testimony of Dr. Joel Fort, who said Ms. Hearst was not mentally ill and was not acting out of fear. Said Bailey, that amounted to an attempt to answer the question the jury must decide. Judge Oliver Carter is to rule today whether the Fort testimony is admissible. Mike Stanley, CBS News.
CBS for Seattle, this is KIXI. The time, 11:06. Bright and beautiful music and CBS News. A perfect blend on KIXI.